Welcome to the College Metropolis Podcast. This is where parents of high school kids learn how to engage, guide, and empower their kids as they go through the college admissions process. And now your hosts, a college admissions pro and a college professor, Hankel and Anthony Cadavid.
Before we begin, we would like to ask you a question. Did you already subscribe to the podcast? If you haven't, please take a moment to click on the subscribe button on the platform you use to download this episode. Subscribing ensures that you'll stay up to date on new episodes. It also helps our show be found more easily by other people who may not be aware of it. You can also help our show greatly by letting other parents know about us and by leaving a positive review on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or any other platform you may have used to listen to the podcast. Your review will let those platforms know we are providing valuable content and it will help others find us more easily. Thank you.
Hello, everybody. Good morning, afternoon, nighttime. This is Anthony Cadavid at the College Metropolis Podcast. Now we are coming to you with episode 89. It seems like yesterday we were doing the first three episodes. Now I am coming to you with episode number 89. And the title of this episode is The Questions College Admissions Officers Ask About You and About Your High School to Estimate Your Potential for Academic Success in College. Also, we will talk about the summer melt and how the summer melt can help your chances for admission and your chances to get more financial aid. All right, so there is an article that I want to talk to you guys about. I want you guys to know about this thing called the summer melt. And I got this from an article that appeared on Higher Ed. Higher Ed, as in higher education, is a magazine, very prestigious magazine that is for college administrators, basically. And it is one of the most prestigious ones. And on this Higher Ed magazine, there is an article that came out recently, and it is titled, Colleges Explain How They Are Filling Their Classes. And I will have a link to the article on the show notes to this episode. But before I go into the guts of this article, I want to explain something to you. I want to explain to you the efforts that college administrators have to do every single year to make sure they have a freshman class that is full. And when I say freshman class, I am talking about all the students that will be accepted or have been accepted to a college and university and are part of the freshman student body. They are the freshmen in that university or that college. These are the people that will get accepted directly from a high school to become a freshman at the university or college. All of the students that will be accepted from across the country. That is what I mean when I say the freshman class. Now, I'm not talking about one class. I'm not talking about a course. I'm talking about all the students that will be considered freshman students. That is to say, first year college students. So every college or university knows exactly how many students they need to accept for a new freshman class. So let's say that, for example, an institution has room for 1,500 students, and they know they have to admit more than 1,500 students so they could fill up that class. The one thing that is not good at all for a college or university is to not have a class that is full. Can you imagine that? Can you imagine having room for 1,500 students? That is the number of students you could serve perfectly well. That is the number of students that will bring in the money for the college to survive, for the college to be able to uphold its mission. And can you imagine if they don't, that college doesn't fill the freshman class? I mean, that's horrible. Unfortunately, because of COVID and everything that has been going on, a lot of colleges were not able to fill every one of the slots in the freshman class. Now, I have to qualify everything I'm saying by saying that what I am telling you here does not apply really to the more selective colleges and universities. Stanford University, Harvard, all of those schools that are very selective, they don't have any problems filling up their freshman classes. I'm talking about the other colleges, the ones that are less selective, that have more of an open admissions type of policy. So let's continue. Usually, the way things work is when you apply to a college, right? Let's say that you apply to 8 institutions. You are going to find that some of those institutions are going to accept you. So the way things go is that by May 1st, you are supposed to contact the college that gave you acceptance that you actually want to attend. And you are supposed to let them know that you are indeed accepting their acceptance and that you are committing yourself to attending that institution. That is why May 1st is called Commitment Day. Now, you are also supposed to contact the colleges that you got accepted into that you do not want to attend to let them know that you are not going to attend. So here's the thing. It used to be, the rules used to say that once a student commits to a college or university, the other colleges or universities could not continue to try to recruit those students. There are rules in place. And so that's what the rule used to be in that regard. Well, guess what? The rules have changed. Now, students can be poached even after they commit to a college or university. Even after a student turns in their deposit. Because, of course, once you get admitted to a college, you are asked to pay a deposit. And once you pay that deposit, it's usually a small amount, but once you pay that deposit, the college knows that they could count on you because you are going to attend. So now, because of this change in the rules, colleges and universities could poach students away from other schools, even schools to which the students have, number one, committed to by the deadline of May 1st, and number two, students who have already paid their deposit. So there you go. So I want to share with you what 3 universities have to say about this. One is Duquesne University, and Duquesne University is in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. And Duquesne University is dealing with this. So check this out. At Duquesne University, the admission cycle started with a record of 12,913 applications. So that is 20% more than last year, and well above the 7,500 applications they used to receive before the pandemic. But get a hold of this. They admitted 10,000 students for a freshman class of 1,500. So that is incredible. They only have room for 1,500 students, but they gave admission to 10,000 of them. Why is that? Because Duquesne knows that the majority of those students that were accepted will probably end up attending other colleges and universities. So check this out. Out of the 10,000 that they actually accepted, 1,520 of them already submitted a deposit. Now, you would think they could relax and say, hey man, they have room for 1,500. They received deposits from 1,520 of them, and so now they could relax at Duquesne University. Well, not really, because Duquesne University is projecting a summer melt rate of between 10 to 12%. What does that mean? The summer melt refers to the number of students that, even though they have been accepted and even though they have paid their deposits, those students will end up attending some other university or college. So imagine that. They accepted 1,520 for 1,500 spots. And in reality, they're expecting to lose between 10 to 12%. So 10% of 1,520 is 152. That is a large number of students. So the thing is, now every student could be poached. What does this mean to you? That's what's important, what this means to you. Well, what this means to you is, number one, your chances for admission into one of these schools, again, not the most selective. This kind of thing doesn't play out at Stanford, doesn't play out at UCLA, not at Berkeley, not at the schools that are selective. and much less at those that are very selective. But at other schools that are sort of with more of an open admissions policy, hey, listen, your chances for admission are going to be very high. Very, very high. Because again, imagine this. For a class of 1,500 students that they need to accept in their freshman class, they admitted over 10,000 students, right? So that's good news for you. Now, let's look at what's going on at Montclair State University in New Jersey. Well, look at this. They received a record 20,000 applications for just 4,000 spots, and they received just about a little bit more than 4,000 deposits. But they're also worried about the summer melt. They're looking to lose about 10% of those students to the summer melt. So competition is very high. Someone from Montclair State University said, every student can be poached, she said. We see more students coming and asking for more money because another college gave them more money, she said. Those requests, by the way, are not necessarily based on financial need. The well-to-do are more informed and are more likely to request more aid. What does that mean to you? Well, what that means to you is that because colleges and universities, again, not the most selective ones, but colleges and universities, they are feeling so pressured to fill up those freshman classes that they are willing to negotiate. And here we go, man. The well-to-do, this is so kind of sucky because unfortunately, these are the people that have the least amount of financial need, are the ones that usually have the most information, and they know that they could negotiate. And so they are the ones that go back to a university like Montclair State University, and they say, hey, Montclair, thank you for accepting me. Guess what? There are two other colleges that gave me more financial aid. So if you want me to attend your university, I would like to ask you to please meet or exceed the amount of financial aid, the amount of institutional aid that the other colleges gave me. And this goes right along the lines of what Gene Edelbach, who was one of our guests in the College Metropolis podcast, it goes along with what Gene Edelbach told us on episode 6. And he said what? He said, when universities and colleges give you financial aid, especially institutional aid, and they tell you that there is no more, ask, because there always is room for more. So this extreme competition among colleges and universities is something you could absolutely take advantage of. There is another university. This is Augustana College, and this is in Private Rock Island, Illinois. One of the administrators at the college said, yesterday, I lost a student to a direct competitor who deposited in December. The competitor offered the student a full tuition scholarship last week, and we couldn't afford to match it, and the student couldn't afford to pass on it. Augustana College had 649 deposits for a goal of 650 for the year, but because of the summer melt, they are not sitting comfortably. All right, so that is all I have to say about that. In other words, there is a bunch of competition amongst colleges. Again, keep in mind, these are not the most competitive colleges to get into. But that kind of works to your advantage, because if you do end up applying to one of those colleges or universities, they will want you because they need students and they know that you could be poached. That gives you, number one, a chance to be admitted, and number two, a very good chance to negotiate. All right, let's get into the episode. The questions college admissions officers ask about you and your high school to estimate your potential for academic success in college. Now, when I talk about this, I am not talking about necessarily about colleges with open admission policies. I'm talking about the more selective schools. They are the ones that more than likely will ask these questions to determine how likely it is that you will succeed. Here's the thing. Everything you turn in as part of your application to the colleges or universities to which you will apply has a specific purpose. You are not being asked to produce all of these things for no reason. They want to get a good idea of, number one, who you have been as a high school student. They want to know who you are as a person. They want to know who you want to be in the future, what your dreams and aspirations are. They want to know your potential for success at that institution if they give you admission. And so to do that, they look at your academic record. That is, they look at the rigor of the courses you took, and that record will be used to try to figure out, here we go, whether you'll be able to tolerate a full college course load. They know that if you're not able to take a full college load, then it is more than likely that you will not complete their program. They also want to look at your academic record to see if you will graduate on time. And again, this is extremely important to them because colleges are, I don't want to say they're graded on this, but they, you know, they kind of are. Colleges that have a bunch of students that don't graduate within 6 years are looked upon as colleges that are not doing their job. They would look at your essay and your record of extracurricular activities to answer these questions. And the questions are, what will this student bring to our college campus? In other words, are you the type of student that will add something positive to the campus? Do you have a record of creating community, of creating teamwork, a record of caring about others, etc.? They also want to look at that record of extracurricular activities to see what you will add to their student body. Will you be a leader? Will you participate in activities? Will you participate in clubs, in events? Would you participate in community service, etc.? Now, here's the thing. Schools are very serious about building the right type of community. These things are extremely important to colleges because they affect life on campus for all. They have an effect on the experience of all students at that college or university. So they want to know, are you going to bring something positive? Are you the kind of kid they want to have on campus? Or are you going to be a troublemaker that is going to sort of bring people down? That's kind of how they look at your application. They want to kind of gauge that for themselves. They also look at your application to answer the question, is this someone who personifies our mission? So I'm telling you, I told you guys a couple of episodes ago, every institution exists to carry out its mission. And every institution is very serious about it. Everything they do to better carry out their mission, including everything that happens in the admissions office. So remember, when you turn in your application and everything that goes in with it, your application will not be turned in a vacuum. They will want to get some context for what you have done in high school. But here is something really important. Colleges and universities know that every high school in the country is not like every other high school in the country. They know that different high schools are different. They know that different high schools in different cities and counties and states, even different high schools within the same school district, are very different one from the other. Because I'm telling you guys, depending on the high school you go to, different high schools have different funds and different resources. The high school I went to, yeah, it had some resources, but it wasn't as well resourced as some of the other high schools in the, not even in the area, outside of the area. I mean, when I used to be in my soccer team and we used to go play some of the schools in, let's see, what high school was it? Redondo Beach High School, I think it was. Boy, those schools were amazing. And of course, they would put a whooping on us because our soccer team was not as well equipped. And as, I mean, we were talented, but we had no good coaching. We didn't practice well. We didn't have the resources. So they used to put a whooping on us every single time. So I know a little bit about different high schools that are not as properly resourced. So colleges and universities know that. So to be fair to you, those college admissions officers will do their own investigating to try to figure out what resources were available to you as a student in your high school and whether you maximized those resources, that were available to you. In other words, they will give your application some context. So the one question college admission officers will ask about your high school is, here we go, pay attention to this, what was the number of advanced courses that were available to you to take in high school? In other words, what was the number of college preparatory courses that were available for you to take? That is to say, how many AP, how many honors, or how many other advanced level courses were available for you to take? By the way, it doesn't matter what names your high school gives courses. In some high schools, a class could be called something, and in another high school, it could be something else. You know, it doesn't matter. College admission officers, they know what those courses are, and they are able to see what it is, what level course you actually took. Now, they also know that some schools only are able to offer a few AP or honors courses. Or they may just have courses designated as advanced, as in advanced algebra. They know that. I mean, some high schools actually don't even offer any AP courses. The good thing is that college admission officers are not going to treat all students the same. They are going to look at you. They are going to look at your application. They're going to look at your high school, and they are going to ask the question, how many AP classes were available to this student? And of course, the other question they are going to ask is the very logical question, how many advanced courses did you actually take? And so if you say you took 3 AP courses, when your school only made available 3 AP courses, that's pretty good. When you say you took 3 AP courses, but your high school offered 26 courses at the AP level, that kind of paints a totally different picture. So they want to see how well you challenged yourself. Now, one of the questions I get a lot is, how many AP courses should I take? And I want to tell you guys, that is a loaded question. And I'm shuffling through my notes because I want to make sure I talk about everything I want to talk about. So the answer to that is, you know what? As many advanced placement courses, as many honors courses, as many advanced level courses, whatever your high school offers, as many as you can take while still being able to do everything else you need to do for your extracurriculars, etc. Now, here's the thing. Here is my advice. Take advanced level courses in the areas of study that you are interested in. So if you say you want to be an engineer, make sure you take AP courses, honors, or advanced courses in math, in physics, in everything else that has to do with engineering. If you want to be a doctor, do the same thing with the sciences, etc. So take advanced level courses in the areas of study you are interested in. Now, also take into consideration what your colleges or universities want to see on your academic record. Some universities and colleges will tell you what they want to see. We have talked about some of those on this podcast. If you apply to a UCLA, if you apply to a Georgia Tech, etc., they are going to tell you what courses they want to see. And those usually have to do with math or the sciences. Also remember that you should take AP courses that still allow you to handle your non-academic responsibilities. In other words, don't just take a bunch of AP courses to take them in a way that sort of sucks up all your time and doesn't allow you to participate in clubs and do those other things. Now, as a general rule, if you apply to a very selective school, let's say like a Stanford or a Berkeley or a UCLA, you know, students who get accepted there usually take between 5 to 13 AP courses. I would say, although some students have been accepted with as little as 5, I would say if your plan is to apply to one of those highly selective schools, take at least 8. So I'll say between 8 and 13. But do have AP courses in at least history, English, math, foreign languages, and science. In other words, those core courses. So don't just have an AP course in underwater basket weaving because that's just the AP course you're going to have on your academic record. For those highly competitive schools, make sure they are in history, English, math, foreign language, or the sciences. Remember that it's not just the classes and the grades you get. It's also everything else that paints a picture of who you are, and that also means that you should worry about your extracurricular activities. So check this out. This is something a lot of students disregard, and it has to do with the fact that your high school and your high school counselor are going to turn in what is called a school report. And the school report is this basically a report that has information about your high school. Demographics, in other words, students by different populations, the sizes of the classes that are being taught, the number of AP courses available, etc. There's also a portion on the Common App that your high school guidance counselor is going to fill out. And guess what? That portion of the Common App that your high school counselor is going to fill out has a section where the counselor is asked to rank your overall course selection in high school. In other words, it is going to ask your counselor whether you took the most demanding courses available, whether you took very demanding courses, average courses, or below average courses. That is something that your counselor has to fill out, and all of these things go to help the college admission officers paint a picture of how well you challenged yourself. Your high school guidance counselor will give them an idea of whether you took the highest level courses available to you or not. So please remember this. Colleges and universities prefer students with academic records that have plenty of advanced level courses, even if the GPA is not the highest. They prefer those students rather than those who padded their GPAs with a bunch of regular level courses. So as I said on the previous episode, they want to see students who, even if they have a lower GPA, took a bunch of advanced level courses. They prefer those students over those who have a higher GPA, but have a bunch of classes that were not as high level. So I think this is good information that will give you a lot to think about. I hope you guys are advancing on your quest to have a great college career. Please allow me to remind you to leave us a 5-star review. Those reviews are very, very helpful because they help us reach a much wider audience of students who also need this information, and also parents who need this information. Thank you so much for listening. I hope you guys are having a great time. Take a moment to appreciate the moment in life that you are experiencing. These are your high school years. Yes, people say the college years will be the happiest in your life. But listen, I am telling you guys, I'm telling you from experience, take a moment to look around and enjoy the people around you. Take a moment to say thank you to those high school teachers you have who are great and who want the best for you. Do something for somebody else. You know that's the best way you can begin to change the world. And take care of yourself. Stay safe. I will see you guys on episode number 90. See you guys.
Thank you for listening to the College Metropolis podcast on collegemetropolis.com.